Hello, I'm Jim Roger, and you're watching The Cutting Edge. Thanks for tuning in. Tonight's show is all about an unsuspecting visitor that's approaching not only our planet, but our solar system. Tonight's show is all about planet Earth being blindsided as planet X passes by in 2003, And with us tonight to discuss this is Mark Hazelwood. He's a researcher and an author and a lecturer on this subject. And Mark, I'd like to thank you for appearing here tonight. It is our privilege, believe me, to have you here tonight. Thanks for coming.
It's an honor for me to be here. I really appreciate it. I have a lot of fun doing this.
Okay, well, believe me, it is our privilege. Could you give the audience a thumbnail sketch of your background, how you got started in this field, and what interested you to take this direction?
Well, I really feel I was spiritually guided to do this from youth. I was the first exposed to Earth change prophecy as a child, Edgar Cayce. And for whatever reason, that sparked an interest over a couple decades, and I perhaps discovered over 100 different intuitives from different places, different times, that all coincided for about a certain timetable and a certain event that should come up. And along the way, I didn't really understand how that would happen, but my interest was there. And then toward the end, things came together. I kind of turned away from prophecy and discovered the science behind Planet X-type objects, and specifically one called, some of the ancients called it Nibiru, the planet of passing. Mm-hmm. It's got a regular orbit of 3,600 years, and it's inbound currently.
Very good. Very interesting. How close, time-wise, in a time frame, do you think that this planet of passing, Planet X or Nibiru, is?
Well, you know, I cannot say for sure. I thought I used to be able to. But you see, I believe it's close enough now where it's in the heliosphere and it's broken into its cometary stage. And with the tail, it has tail drag. And any one of these large Planet X type objects with tail drag do not follow regular celestial mechanics. In other words, they'll act like what the ancients used to call as the lawless ones or cosmic serpents. So the head might surge forward, pause, the tail will catch up. So how to determine, I don't know. I know it's currently inbound. Whether it's a few months or a few short years, I can't say, but that's what I suspect at this time.
So basically we're expecting something that's not following conventional laws of physics or celestial mechanics?
That is true at this time. Any large Planet X type object that breaks into a comet will not follow normal celestial mechanics. That doesn't mean it's going to go all over the place. It's still inbound. It just trying to come up with a timetable is difficult at best.
I see. So what really is Planet X? Is it a meteor, a comet, an asteroid? What is it most like?
Well, it is large enough to be a planet, and it is a planet. At the same time, when it enters in a heliosphere of a sun, which it is now, it develops a tail. And so at that point, you can call it a large comet. But you could also call it a cross between a celestial star and a planet. So it might be called a brown dwarf. The average solar system has a dwarf in it, and the average solar system has two suns. So we're very average. We have a second sun, very few are aware of, that's dark. You can find this out if you were to go to the library, ask for the New Illustrated Science and Invention Encyclopedia between 1987 and 89. Go to volume 30, look under space probes, you'll see a diagram of what pioneers 10 and 11 found, which is our dark star, our twin sun, which is no hazard to us at all. And then the 10th planet, which is another way to say planet X or Roman numeral number 10.
Okay. Very good. Interesting. So you say a dark star, a twin sun. So in other words, are we living in a binary star system here on Earth?
We're in a binary system. Very few are aware of this. The information will slip out, like in publications, like I identified, although very few people talk about it. It's almost it's sort of suppressed information because it sets the stage too well for this orbit of Planet X, which is supposedly goes back and forth between the two suns and takes approximately 3,600 years, like I said.
Interesting. And this comes from the Sumerian cuneiform tablets, their records, is that it?
The Sumerian tablets do discuss the orbital time of Planet X, which they identify as 3,600. It may be closer to 3,700 years. They also name this planet as the 12th planet because they also included the sun and our moon as planets. So it can be called the 10th, the 12th, Nibiru. I have actually discovered 50 different names for this planet. I put 35 in my text, mainly from ancient historical sources who had great respect for it. I mean, some of these old names would be akin to godlike names. Celestial Lord Shiva, Comet of Doom, the Destroyer. I mean, they're telling Nemesis. They're telling names. They really
good names.
Yeah, they understood the significance of when this thing comes, and consequently, the names reflect that.
Okay, so we're talking about something with a 36 or 3,700 year orbital path,
right?
And so then, are there archaeological records that would support periodic destruction within those time frames, 3,600, 3,700
years? Absolutely, yes. In fact, I have a section in my text that goes into that. I could have filled my whole book with it, but I decided, I can't just do that. It's not what this is about. So in that section, I go back 14 passages as far as records go. But the most telling evidence is not carbon dating. It is the evidence for the very last passage between 1600 and 1700 BC. And that is from tree rings around the entire globe. So it shows it was a worldwide event, a worldwide pollution event that lasted for decades. In other words, between 1600 to 1700 BC, tree rings from that time were severely narrowed. And not just in, like I said, not just in one area of the world, the entire world. And a mega pollution event like that for decades would not happen unless there was something significant that happened to this planet, like a passing celestial body or Planet X type object, which is what this is.
Oh, okay, very interesting. So there does seem to be periods of past catastrophic destruction. One thing as you were speaking that entered my mind was the frozen mammoths in Siberia that were suddenly frozen. Some of these animals were frozen so quickly they still had fresh vegetation in their mouths and stomachs, and so whatever overtook them was fast and it was catastrophic and it was real. Hard science agrees with it. So I suppose that really supports what you're talking about.
Yes, in fact, my research is complemented by a man by the name of James McKinney, and he's got the credentials to back him up and has been studying the subject for some 30 years. He has a book along similar lines called Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes. And he brings up that when a Planet X type object like this passes, and there's more than one, the Nibiru is just our regular half-brother to this solar system, a rather large electromagnetic wave hits the surface. If it passes within a certain million miles away, a number of a million miles away, and that could cause the surface to move similar to the sea. In other words, a tidal wave could go through the crust of the Earth and move it over the core, which would suddenly put the North and South Pole on different places on the crust, and that would take a tropical environment and suddenly throw it into a polar or a very cold environment that would suddenly flash freeze a mammoth or several different animals just like it, and you'd have these records that that show this, and they are there.
Not a good vacation spot. What about evidence of past catastrophic events within our own local solar system? Is there any of that that could be attributed to this?
Well, yes. In fact, Mars has has records on its surface that pretend of plasmatic exchange that could happen. In other words, these would be large lightning bolts that would happen through space between any large Planet X type object and another body. In fact, the Grand Canyon may have not been formed by water. It may have been vaporized by one of these large plasmatic exchanges. In fact, last year, one of the moons of, I believe it was Saturn, was etching a groove into the surface of Saturn, and all of us saw it, which was kind of wild. So these canals on Mars could have pretend of a past event that was rather severe. In fact, some of the research from James McKinney would show that Mars may have been a vibrant planet with an atmosphere, but one of these celestial bodies passed by and just sucked the atmosphere right off of it, along with a lot of the water. So severe events can happen without collisions, is what I'm saying here.
Yeah, I think that all of mainstream mainline science agrees that the planet Mars at one time had a much heavier atmosphere. It was it had huge oceans. They're gone now. Maybe they're below the surface, but
things
radically changed there.
Yeah.
We have the asteroid belt just beyond planet Mars. Well, they call it the asteroid belt. Maybe it's the remains of Mars, you know?
Well, there could have been remnants of collisions. In other words, when this object comes through, it is the time when the majority of the cratering on the moon and the Earth and all the other the planets in our solar system happen. In other words, there is a billiard effect that is set up. Although it does not run into anything, it passes on by. It brings in an entourage of objects, and there's where you get your possibility of impacts with its entourage of asteroids and other objects it brings with us. Not a pretty scenario.
Drags a whole family of things along with it, so to speak, I guess.
Just last month, what came through? NEAT.
Tell us about that.
Okay, well, it was a total media blackout. A large Planet X type object came through our solar system right around the sun. It was as large as Mercury. Like I said, 100% media blackout, unless you're looking at SOHO on the internet or on a few obscure e-groups like what I have and a few other people
have. Can people at home look this up somewhere?
Oh, sure. They can find out the details of this. But very shortly thereafter, NASA and the what I call the disinformation crew started to try to play this down because they did their best to cover it up. The second the surface lifted off of the sun, a massive coronal mass ejection caused by the plasmatic interchange between this passing object and started going towards this object. The second it hit the object, they shut down SOHO for 8 hours trying to cover up what may happen, because anything could have happened. This thing, like I said, planet-sized comet could have taken off and just a piece of it could have disrupted Earth, just passing by Earth if it would have changed its trajectory. This large solar flare could have affected us severely, so that's why they shut it down. They did not want people to know here, and that's their policy.
And another thing they're doing like that at NASA, from what I understand, is a few years ago they put the downlink video from the space shuttle to all the Earth feeds on a 45-second delay. I guess they'd had too many UFO encounters or strange objects floating around out there in space, and they decided they wanted to have some censorship of that, I believe. So
yeah, they're all about censorship.
I think they ought to just let us see what's really going on out there.
Well, if you work for any kind of organization like that, you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement saying that if you are aware of any sort of inbound object or calamitous event that could possibly come up, you cannot talk about it. Because, you know, the powers that be really want to control the a possible panic and keep the financial markets stable as long as possible. You know, they may be getting ready themselves, but they know they don't have the resources to help the public, so they're just kind of letting them go by the wayside.
Yeah. You know, getting back to the Sumerian stuff, I read a lot of Zachariah Sitchin's material.
And excellent research.
Yeah, there's not too many more people alive on the planet that can interpret that stuff, I guess. But apparently, you know, 3,500, 3,600 years ago, these people had a very detailed knowledge of the solar system. They knew how many planets we had. They knew how many moons there were around each one of the planets. These people, they were quite advanced. And in just 100 years ago here on Earth, we started finding these things out in modern science that we knew 3,600 years ago, which I thought was amazing. But there was, or is, detailed information about Nibiru, however you prefer to pronounce it. And so we have some interesting information in the past, but are there many mainstream scientists today taking a real hard, serious look at this now, this?
Well, there are quite a few who are. Mm-hmm. There's not too many speaking up, to tell you the truth, mm-hmm. because it is a taboo subject to bring up in the major media, and they know it. But there's quite a bit of interest in some of the evidence that is starting mm-hmm. to be uncovered, like some ruins off the coast of Cuba. You know some about this. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you know.
Well, I know on Linda Howe's website, I think it's earthfiles.com, there's a huge article about some underwater structures that are 2,200 feet down below the surface of the water off the western tip of Cuba. And the way this stuff was discovered, I think originally it was a Canadian company was taking those sound pictures, what do you call them?
Ultrasound, yeah, right.
Yeah, ultrasound photographs of the ocean floor mm-hmm. in an oil research study. Looking for good places to drill oil, I guess. And they saw all these symmetrical blocks and grid patterns on the ocean's floor, mm-hmm. 2,200 feet down. And at one point, they lowered a camera down there, and they found a symbol on one of the granite stones. Mm-hmm. It was an oval, a horizontal oval, and a vertical oval. Well, on the island of Cuba, in the caves, on the walls inside the caves, they're finding that same symbol in the caves up above sea level. So evidently, something catastrophic had to happen at one time to cause the shift, evidently. Well, and that's just one, you know, that's just the one in Cuba.
Right.
But there's other cases off the coast of Japan and Okinawa where they've discovered these pyramid-like structures with turtle carvings, things of that nature, and they're definitely symmetrical, appear to be definitely man-made. And then Graham Hancock and others are involved in some research right now, I think 22 miles out at sea off the coast of India, with a horseshoe formation of an underwater city out there. So what's going on here, folks? I mean, we talk about the legends of Atlantis, too, and things like that, so.
Well, to the best of my information, there are ruins off the coast of every major continent all over the world. And we have knowledge of the tip of the iceberg of what's out there. Mm-hmm. And these kind of things would not be there unless great changes happened prior. And they mm-hmm. don't happen gradually. They mm-hmm. happen overnight. Mm-hmm. I would suggest, though, that people would look at this from a spiritual standpoint, because this specific passage is going to be accompanied at this time with something wholly different than I feel that any other passage. In other words, we are going through what is known from spiritual sources as an ascension right now, a graduation, if you will. And I don't believe you're going to be able to get away from where you're supposed to be when this event happens. That means you should follow your guidance as for mm-hmm. what you should do. And some people are not going to have to prepare, and other people should. And so I can't determine what you should do. You got to find that in your heart. You got to feel your own guidance. I feel that somehow, because of the work I've been guided to do, that my family and I will be taken care of. And that could be from a half a dozen situations, but I feel I'm going to be fine. Other people are being guided to build dome homes in the upper Midwest and different areas mm-hmm. of the world. And other people feel, you know, that maybe it's their time to go, and they want to ignore the situation. And everyone's got to play out their perfection. There's no wrong or right about how to deal with this. It all boils down to the individual.
Do you think that this is really happening? And if it is, and probably is, for all we know, the FEMA people or people that normally would handle emergencies, Red Cross, FEMA, or whatever, that might know about this would want to keep the public calmed down about this?
Well, it's interesting you brought up FEMA, because their budget has suddenly doubled for fiscal 2003, from $3.3 billion to $6.6 billion. And they've been given an order as of late, which is kind of interesting. They've been told that they want to, they have to learn how to evacuate every major city in the United States. What for? Well, the first thing they say is under the guise of terrorism, but if you look into the fine print, they give a whole long list of earth change type situations that they're getting ready for, earthquakes.
That's actually part of their criteria? Oh,
absolutely part of what they need to be doing right now. It is written in stone. Mm-hmm. It is an order that's been given. And it's interesting to look at, that they're being given something that I don't think they're being told the whole story about. But they're given a lot more money to do this. And what they do with it and how they use it, who knows, and how it exactly plays out is kind of interesting. On the other hand, I hear there are plans, the opposite plans may be in effect, depending on the situation. They may decide, I've heard, to blow up bridges so certain cities you can't evacuate. You're going to be basically caught up in a chaos. So how they handle what city and when and how it plays out, who knows?
Okay. So then, do you think there would be a disinformation campaign going on to keep people off the rail, the main track of things?
Well, absolutely. In order to stave off panic and financial collapse, the powers that be have hired thousands of people within the CIA and other organizations to counter this information, to go after anyone, including myself's character, and try to attack them in any way, shape, or form that they can, to get people to turn away from this. But, you know, since this is happening during ascension process, I think some of this stuff may be backfiring on people. In other words, if you were being guided to this information, if all of a sudden you hear, okay, Planet X is not real from somebody, all of a sudden it may just jog a memory in you. What is Planet X? It may just get you curious enough to actually research and find out the reality of this and find the people that have got the scientific credentials, like James McKinney that I'm working mm-hmm. with, and find out the reality of this situation. So, yes, the disinformation campaign's in place. No, I don't necessarily agree with it, but I accept it as part of, I guess, God's ultimate plan, that somewhere in between with the people that are talking about this and trying to get it out and the people that are trying to suppress it, by the end, it'll equalize itself and play it out exactly the way it should. So it's each side has got their role to play, and I can't say that they both aren't needed for mm-hmm. a number of different reasons. Now, if suddenly the powers that be decide to reveal the situation all of a sudden to the world, perhaps it would cause panic and financial collapse. Would I want that? No, but that's not the way this is being handled. So, you know, I can go forward with what I'm doing and feel free mm-hmm. to do my best to get this information out and mm-hmm. not worry because of the other side's mm-hmm. disinformation campaign.
Interesting. You know, I've heard other people talking about this same subject, and I've heard them say that qualified people, astronomers, interested in this particular subject, who were trying to get telescope time on certain telescopes around the world, were accepted and it was okay. And then the moment that the operators of the telescopes found out what they wanted to do, sorry, we're closed. You'll have to go look somewhere else.
Yeah, I've heard this for, I don't know, well over a year, that all the major telescopes are tied up and you can't get any time. And some of the stories are pretty ridiculous and repetitive. And some of these scopes are just being destroyed. They're allowed to be burnt up in fires where they could have easily spent, you know, a few thousand dollars to protect, mm-hmm. you know, a $20 million investment, and they're just not doing it. They're allowing them to, mm-hmm. you know, a few of them to be destroyed. So, Yeah, it is part of the situation. If people were to research this, they'll see the reality of that and a lot more. I mean, any time there's a large Planet X type object entering into the solar system, there's a plasmatic exchange with the sun. It causes the sun to start going bonkers. In other words, start discharging the surface and causing lots of solar flares. We've had a regular 11.5-year solar cycle now go on and on, decade after decade. Suddenly, this cycle won't end. It's supposed to end the solar maximum 99-2000. We're supposed to be at absolute solar minimum now. The amount of solar activity is at an all-time high right now.
I know that. I'm a ham radio operator. I know the bands, the long-distance bands are still wide open, and they should be closed. It should be very difficult to use those bands right now. And the sunspot activity enhances that.
It's off the scale. I mean, it's affecting our weather. In fact, all this so-called global warming that you're hearing about has all to do with the amount of electricity and protons that are coming from the sun affecting our jet streams and changing our weather. Our dirty little civilization puts out about as much hydrocarbons as one volcano going off at one time. We're not affecting the weather. So you don't buy into that global warming caused by us scenario. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't clean up our act and that pollution isn't wrong. We're not causing the changes that has gone on acutely since 1995 in the weather. It is all the result of this inbound planet and the solar flaring, the excess in solar flaring. Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned something a minute ago about the, the electromagnetic effects as this thing approaches.
Okay.
Are you referring to something like, for example, when you walk across a carpet and touch the doorknob, zap? You know, is that the differently charged spheres coming in contact with each other? Is it sort of like that? Or?
Well, the universe is 99% plasma. It conducts electricity, which is totally against the normal knowledge in the astronomical community. Although now, you know, there are a lot of scientists that are coming around and they recognize the electrical nature of the universe. We have electrical fields and we're connected being this close. I think within 15 feet of any individual, your electrical fields start to mesh. It's the same way with the planets, except for it's a lot larger and it goes out a lot farther.
Magnetosphere, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the planets are very much like people in that respect. There's the electrical interchange that is happening between them and between us. And it's all very similar.
You know, not to go too far off the track here, one of the first things you learn in with electricity is a current and voltage and the magnetic field, they're all opposite each other. Mm-hmm. And any time you cut the lines of magnetic flux or a magnetic field, any time you bring anything perpendicular through those visible lines of magnetic flux, you generate an electric current.
Correct.
And if you remember the tethered satellite a few years
Jesus.
Ago.
Oh, Jesus. McKinney told NASA, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that.
It's one of the most basic lessons in electricity.
They almost lost the shuttle doing
they
that.
They lost two of their three navigational computers. They almost didn't get home. But what they were doing is they were dragging, I think it was, 13 miles long, the tether, through the magnetic lines of flux, generating a current as they go along. I think what they did discover
current.
Is a new way of generating electricity out in space when you're in the vicinity of a planet.
Well, you know, James McKinney is a very dynamic scientist, and he can explain, you know, what he knows to your triple doctor as well as the layman. And what he says, the sun basically works as a battery. It has a capacitor around it, in other words, the solar field. And it works very much like a backyard bug zapper. Whenever a fly comes in to that solar field, it discharges the capacitor, and it causes the bug to get killed, the electric current. Same way, a small comet coming through will discharge the capacitor, a small solar flare will happen. When a large object comes in, it doesn't have to get very close, and it starts to discharge the entire surface of the sun on a regular basis. That's what's happening now. These large solar flares are coming off. And you know what? It's changing us genetically. It's changing all the plants on this and animals on this on Earth. And, you know, Earth is not even being singled out. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the planets are changing here. The luminosity values of all the planets are increasing here in the solar system. Mm-hmm. The moon has actually developed an atmosphere about 6,000 feet of what they call natrium. The poles on Mars are melting. Mm-hmm. There's been a 40 to 50% magnetic polar shift already on the outer planets, the largest ones. So it's not just Earth. The global warming is a joke. To try to blame our little civilization, all this happening in the solar system all at once is a real joke. Now, this is suppressed information that actually came from a Dr. Dimitriev, who used to work with James McKinney, but the powers that be did their best to cut the lines of communication off between them, because he's in Russia and James McKinney's over here. But some of his research slipped out. One of the things that he showed, a real intricate study between the mid-70s and the mid-90s, seismic activity has increased 400 to 500% on this planet. And that's not including the last 7 years, which I'm sure is another 200% increase. So this is the kind of information that's being kept out of the major media. Basically being lied to.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know that what you're saying about coronal mass ejection, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. is a serious problem. It wipes out our communication satellites. And if you think about it, the sun is 93 million miles away, and I think it takes approximately 48 hours for those particles to get here. So if you divide the 93 million miles by 48, it gives you the speed of these particles, which is in the millions of miles per hour. And they're going through our bodies, they're going through our communication satellites, and it's more serious than people realize. And it complicates space travel. That's another subject all in itself.
Let me say, one of these large coronal mass ejections carries a certain amount of light, but it also carries a certain amount of matter. One can carry as much matter as you would find in 100 battleships. Mm-hmm. All hitting the Earth all at the same time, if it's headed in this direction. That can create a significant change in a number of different things mm-hmm. that are going on here.
I'd hate to be paying the insurance bill on some of those satellites.
Yeah. Yeah, at a certain point, what I've been told is when this object gets near enough to us, there's not going to be a satellite functioning, period.
Mm-hmm. Well, if this is really happening, should we all run up our charge cards, buy a brand new car, do anything you want, and have a good time? I'm only kidding, folks.
No, that's an interesting suggestion. What I'm suggesting to people is to start making their life right now.
Spiritually.
Spiritually. Because okay. if they can get their life functioning in a way they feel that they're living their ideal life, as far as how they communicate with others mm-hmm. and what they're doing, how they feel about their life, more than likely they're going to attract a different situation than the next guy. In other words, I feel it's all about spiritual advancement at this time. And if you can get yourself in a certain, increase your vibratory rate to a certain mm-hmm. level, you're not going to experience these calamities like other people. You might even be taken off planet some way, somehow. I don't know. You know, there are a million mm-hmm. different things that could come up to help you through this. And you may not have to worry about it if you just start now. Mm-hmm. To change certain things about the way you view others and the way you view this planet. Mm-hmm.
So, in a physical sense, I suppose the worst case scenario of Planet X passing is very serious. What would you think for the planet here?
You know, I've gotten a lot of information from people, insiders within government and the astronomical community around the world since I've written this text. And one specific person was contracting out a dome home up in the upper Midwest. And he used to be in the military, went in and asked for a while. And the contractor he confided in is his best friend. So he let it fly. He says that NASA speculates that when this thing goes by, as many as two-thirds of the population could perish because of mainly the crustal movement that I discussed earlier, this electromagnetic gravitational wave.
Tectonic shifting?
Yeah, and it wouldn't necessarily be the crust that would cause the
the population to drown. It would be, the oceans wouldn't stop moving after it stopped. So they would slosh perhaps 50, 100, 200 miles inland, and 95% of the population of the planet lives within 50 to 100 miles of the shoreline. There's where the worst case scenario could come up.
That's where the masses live.
And, you know, your Bible talks about a time in Revelation where every wall will fall. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a wave, a tidal wave going through the crust caused by this planet going by, and bear in mind that the moon actually moves the crust a couple inches, and it's very small compared to this body that's supposed to be 4 to 5 times as large as the Earth, and perhaps 20 to 25 times its mass, then you can imagine that the cities around the globe could turn to dust. And you would have to be in a quite a good mental, spiritual space to make sure that you get through this.
You know, I've heard it said that, I don't mean to take a look at the dark side here, but yeah. I've heard it said that if you knew you were going to die tomorrow, would you be doing anything differently today, folks?
Well, I wouldn't. I would see, I don't suspect that that's... I wouldn't look at it that way, because you don't know you're going to die.
No.
You know, I believe, first of all, my personal belief is so-called divine intervention happens every day. Mm-hmm. I mean, this would be, I guess, non-physical beings that, you know, change things for you individually. Sure. So even in the midst of calamity, that doesn't mean that you're going to die. And let's say you might have some ET help. There's another possibility. There's so many different situations that come up. And I also feel there's order in the universe so that you, everyone individually, their higher self knows exactly where they're going to be and where they're guided, what they're guided to do and how they're going to get through or not get through this event. So with that in mind, there's really nothing you can do about it except
That's
for
right.
follow your own guidance, whatever that may be, and not worry about it at all. Except for to see it as a very exciting time, knowing that this is the time where there's a graduation going on. A graduation meaning we're going to a different a state of being, another dimension, so to speak. These super psychic children are being born all around the planet right now. Maybe the preliminary new culture that is supposed to spawn from the ashes of this one, so to speak. And a lot of us will be you know, kind of held up and preserved to help that come about. So if you're getting exposed to this information now, perhaps it's because you're supposed to be one of those characters that is supposed to live through it.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, that's you know? That's my focus. I want to leave people with encouraging news here, not the dark side.
No, I didn't mean it in that sense either, physically.
No, I understand. You want to see the possibilities here, but look at it from
well,
you know,
the way
a certain
I look
perspective.
At it is, you can't do it anything about it. You can't control it. So why worry about it?
Exactly.
Just accept it and roll with it.
Yeah,
I mean,
and there you go. I see it as an exciting time.
I believe we're primarily spiritual beings anyway.
That's it.
So that's, right. that's the only thing that really matters. But let me ask you physically here, if it passes, there's different scenarios between the Earth and the Sun, or out beyond the Earth,
right.
or on the other side of the Sun, what these various effects would be. In each one of those.
Well, certainly if it passed on the other side of the sun relative to us, the effects would be lessened, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they would be non-calamitous. So I wouldn't worry about even where exactly it's going to pass. I know the powers that be are trying to figure out exactly where it's going to pass, and they've looked at it by a number of high-tech devices that I've gotten wind of, at least a dozen. And if I've gotten wind of at least a dozen, then they've been looking at it you know, for years. In fact, a retired full bird colonel in 99 said that, you know, they've known about it for at least 35 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, another triple doctorate contacted me and said that, you know, he got to view the thing through a live Hubble link-up through a secret meeting. And the only reason he even attended the meeting because he read my book and got interested in it. So that's why he gave me this hush-hush information. So, you know, tidbits of information like this come to me constantly. And so I know they're aware of it. I don't know that they know, but I know exactly what's going to happen, but I know they've gotten themselves ready for it by all this underground digging and preparation that they've gone through to get ready for this. Now, I don't know that was the right way to go. Big money can make big mistakes. Mm-hmm. If you're taking the crust and you're shaking it out like a blanket, I wouldn't want to be entombed
big
inside.
Big money makes bigger mistakes, right?
I wouldn't want to be inside the earth, you know, and you know, waiting for this thing to come down, even if I had 10 years worth of stored food. I mean, they can go there, and I'd rather take my chances on the surface.
I don't worry about it. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't either.
Let me ask you, you're not the only one out there that's talking about this now, right? There are others, right?
Oh, yeah, a lot of people are. In fact, probably the center person as far as who you'd want to pay attention to, who's got the credentials to back them up, because I don't have those kind of credentials, would be Professor Physicist James McKinney with his book that I mentioned earlier.
What is it?
It's called Planet X Comets and Earth Changes.
Okay.
Now, I even feature his book on my website, planetx2003.com. That's my website.
Say it again, just one more time for the audience.
planetx2003.com. In the beginning, I thought that it may pass in 2003. Now that I don't commit to a date, that my website still stands the same. It says 2003 on it. But the revised version of my book has got a question mark on it, and I make it very clear. I don't have a specific date because I don't know exactly. I just know it's inbound currently. But if you click on James's book, it brings you to his website, and he's got a whole list of information he's gathered for 30 years on this subject. So him and myself and probably a few hundred other real serious researchers are putting information out on a regular basis about all that they know about this. And then you get your occasional insider that lets loose with information, and then a lot of times afterwards they suddenly lose their sources, they get cut off. So it's an interesting interplay that's going on. Leaks come out, they get plugged up, more leaks come out, there's and so on and so forth. The game goes ahead.
So in other words, the physical effects of something approaching here, the solar flares, the earthquakes, volcanoes.
Majority of volcanoes would go off if the crust suddenly, you know, started to move like that. Yeah, this would give rise to the.
Things seem to be heightening.
Yeah, exactly. We're building to a peak, a shift right now. That's really rather obvious. The poles are melting here on our planet, which is really disconcerting to some people who don't have the entire picture in mind. That's what I've done with my text. I pulled together all the information, pulled it into a mosaic, make it a nice, quick, easy read, and people can get a firm picture on what's going on real quick. Now, for the more technically minded, they might get into McKinney's book to see some of the detailed research that verifies this situation. It all depends on how much you need.
I've heard him lecture, and I've heard you lecture as well, up at the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada. Very interesting man you are also, I might say. I'd like to mention something else that I think might tie in directly with this. The Vatican has built a telescope in southeastern Arizona on Mount Graham. Some call it the Vatican Telescope. I think they own 51% of it. Even the road signs up to the scope are written in, I think, it's either Latin or Italian. And others call it the MGIO, the Mount Graham International Observatory. Mm-hmm. But either way, it's the Vatican Telescope. And I find it interesting that an institution like that, who evidently in the United States here has its own share of financial problems and lawsuits and so forth going on these days, can put a huge project like that together. I live about 45 miles away from that telescope during the week where I work in Wilcox. And believe me, 45 miles away, that building is huge. This is a big project. So, and I've heard other people say that maybe there's more to the prophecies of Fatima. Like, the church isn't lying, that maybe they're not telling the rest of the story. What are they really looking for up there, a religious institution? You know, I don't know. I've just heard these things said, and I just find it interesting that they're in the middle of a project like this, and they have a sister telescope, I think, over in Barcelona, Spain, that works in conjunction with this one that's not quite ready yet. It'll be ready in May, I think. But what are your feelings on that, Mark?
Well, I'm fully aware that the Vatican has old scrolls information. They're certainly looking for wormwood. And that's the reason for these telescopes. That's why the Jesuits, as you know, are learned, degreed astronomers. Also, Father Malachi Martin, I don't know if you're aware who he was.
Yes.
He spoke on a worldwide, nationwide at least, radio show talking about this inbound planet and saying that in 1997 it would be here within 5 to 10 years. And when Art asked him about, it was the Art Bell show, when Art asked him about what he expected, does he expect millions of deaths, he said that, well, it could be a lot worse than that. So very shortly thereafter, he died under mysterious circumstances. So I don't think they wanted him to speak about what
he knew.
Yeah,
very interesting. Did they get the image of the Vatican Telescope website up? I don't know. Okay, great. Okay. Here's something else, too, about the Mount Graham Telescope Project. This is from, I think, a Native American website. It's http://nativenet-uthscsa.edu. And they talk about the project. They talk about a dollar figure of $33 million. And one of the things, supposedly it's built on sacred ground, and that's upsetting the Native Americans. And also one of the other things that sort of adds a little insult to injury is, I guess, they're naming this telescope Columbus, of all things, which really doesn't sit well with the Native Americans, I guess.
Trying to rub them the wrong way, it seems.
Okay, so then this really, Planet X is really like a brown dwarf or a high density mass.
Yeah, you might call it just a cross between a star and a planet. So it's denser than a planet, certainly not as large as a star. And so when it sails on through, it does create quite a wake. And it's not the kind of thing where it needs to hit anything, you know, that doesn't normally hit anything, and don't expect to hit anything this time, but doesn't need to. What James McKinney calls action at a distance, which the major media will not talk about, will not educate the public about. When they talk about, you know, possible celestial events, they'll only mention impact events of smaller objects. They won't talk about larger objects coming through. Mm-hmm. They won't mention, like, this object that came through just a month ago, NEET, this largest Mercury object. And they won't talk about, and I'll repeat it, action at a distance can cause major calamitous events on celestial bodies that are just in the vicinity as it passes by these larger Planet X type objects. And I say objects because even though we've identified this one and this one has a regular history, there are other objects that come through the solar system on a regular basis that are like NEET.
So. Not a new concept.
Yeah, not a new concept, exactly.
Okay, let me interrupt our flow of discussion for a moment here to get some announcements, and we're getting close here. And we'll get back to it after I do these, just to be sure these get in, okay? Mm-hmm. In future shows here, we're going to have the next show will feature Victoria Lillenquist, and she's the one that predicted the UFOs at the Olympics. And when she went up to Salt Lake City, radio and TV stations all around the world interviewed her, sort of laughed at her and scoffed at her with the giggle factor, and lo and behold, they showed up. Two of the local TV stations up there in Salt Lake City shot the video, and she'll have that video with her. She'll be here April 10th. The April 24th show will be canceled because of meetings here at the studio. So that show, we were going to have Wendell Stevens. We'll have to move him on down the schedule a little later on. May 8th, Jelaine Sherrod will be talking about Britain's ancient prehistory, ancient mysteries, poltergeists, and how all these things relate to the ley lines over there. And Robert Ghost Wolf will be here May 22nd. On June 5th, I think we're going to have a very interesting guest, a professional person from out of town who remains unnamed right now with her abduction experiences. And we have other taped interviews in the can with Stan Romanek, Nick Bagage, Valerie Uberoff from Russia, Graham Birdsall from the UK, Dr. John Mack, Philip Mantel, Roberto Pinotti, Dan Iria. He was the alleged Dr. Reed's assistant. He has a very interesting story to tell. And Dr. Roger Lear about his investigations in the Vagina case in South America. And also, there'll be a MUFON meeting Saturday, April 19th at 1 p.m. at Wilmot Library on Wilmot Road in Tucson. Richard King, the MUFON section director from the Yuma area, will be speaking about Linda Howe's investigations into the same thing Dr. Roger Lear will be talking about at some point in this show, the Virginia incident in Brazil. And a final announcement, and a Mexican congressman from Roswell has obtained approval for the House, from the House, for Extraterrestrial Culture Day over there. His message to the ETs is, "We come in peace and friendship," which is kind of nice. So those are the announcements. Now we can get, those are covered, so we can get back to this if you don't mind. So how and what do you think, if there are any physical possibilities for people to survive? Some people will survive it physically, right? Others will move on.
Listen,
directly.
This thing has been going by for millions of years, for what I understand. So, you know, we're here today, what, 6-7 billion strong. So, you know, we're going to be here after each passage. I mean, there's always survivors, and us being here now after all these passages certainly prove that out. Now, as far as getting this information, I'd like to suggest something. If you're trying to get a hold of my text or James McKinney's and you go to a major bookstore, you're not going to find it. This is suppressed information. There has been an array of lies put out to the entire network of major bookstores, either saying that this text is not published yet or that it's out of print, not available. So the only way you're going to get it is go to these websites, like the website I mentioned, my website, or an obscure bookstore that might carry it, which would be very obscure. They don't want this information out there. We can't get these books, McKinney and I, into any major bookstore. They won't carry it. These people that control the media and you know, mm-hmm. The major bookstores are serious about suppressing this information. So you're going to have to kind of take a back turn if you want this information.
You keep an ear to the ground, right?
Yeah, exactly. Underground books is what we got here. I didn't plan for it to be that way. I wished it wasn't, but that's the way it ends up.
You know, I always thought it was interesting. I've often thought about this, that if a catastrophic event affected the planet, and we all go back, those that would survive, I mean,
right.
Go back to square one. Who knows how to make steel? Who knows how to make rubber? I mean, we're going to go back to rubbing sticks together and building fires, and it's not going to happen overnight. I think the more technical, the more high-tech a society becomes, the more vulnerable it becomes also, for the very same reason.
Yeah, you're right. I think there may be pockets of the society left over that could still mm-hmm. hold on to some technology, mm-hmm. but it would only be pockets.
I know of a group right now somewhere in the Northwest that are building these geodetically domed structures,
right,
with rebar and cement.
Bucky Fuller.
Yeah, and they're up in the Northwest. They're building an entire colony of these things up there. And I'm not saying it's for this reason, but they're designed to withstand earth changes.
Well, I know that a group of NASA engineers has contracted out a company by the name of Monolithic Dome Home to build several large structures in what could be a safe area, which would be eastern mid-Arizona. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, little tidbits of information mm-hmm. like that, you know, pass by my eyes on occasion. So. Yeah, that isn't the only group of people that are taking this seriously.
Mm-hmm. As this event approaches, I imagine the visitors out there will be on looking, and the closer we get to that event, if it's this year, next year, the year after, maybe 2012, who knows, as it approaches, one sign or way of knowing that it how close it might be, would be perhaps be how many sightings there are, maybe if there's a sudden influx.
There could be a correlation. I mean, certainly if you go to any sort of UFO convention and you look at the books, there's a good 10% of them, if you pick them up, that will talk about earth changes, warnings from our ET brothers. So perhaps that may be another reason why the government suppresses information about ETs, although...
Okay, Mark, we're almost out of time.
Right.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No,
can you
ahead.
give us your contact information out loud?
Okay. The website is planetx2003.com. And anyone can call me on my cell phone, and frequently get calls all over the world, 407-415-9515. So give me a call or contact my website. I'm wide open. I always carry my cell phone with me, and I talk to anyone and everyone about this situation.
Very good. So basically what it's all boiling down to for you is to don't be afraid, stay spiritual, and just don't worry about it, right?
Well, it's not that you don't worry about it. Do what you're guided to do. And if mm-hmm. that is worrying about it in a certain specific manner, that's fine. I've been told for whatever reason by a half dozen intuitives that my family and I shouldn't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's true for me. Maybe that's true for someone else out there. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But if someone is guided to build a dome home and run up to the hills, by all means, do so. But do so, and you know, with a little flavor of fun to go along with it. Don't look at this as some sort of ominous event. Be excited about it. That's also part of my message.
I'm not so sure I'd want to be around here physically afterwards, anyways.
Oh, I will. That's going to be exciting times, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, I'd like to say thank you to all the viewers. Thanks for watching, and we'll look forward to seeing you again on the next show. And again, thanks for coming. I'd love to have you back on again.